Chapter 22. More Troubles in Nagpur Jail. The jailer was promoted as superintendent and sent to some other prison. He was replaced by a jailer who was also an Englishman. The first thing he did after resuming duty was to cow us down by making us obey humiliating orders. The superintendent encouraged him to be strict with us. The first order he gave was that we would be deprived of our right to wear our turbans and our kashere, and we would have to accept a patka, which was a small piece of cloth to wrap around our head, but insufficient to form a turban. In the place of a kashere, we were given knickers, a tight and clumsy underwear, which as a Sikh symbol serves as a purpose as khaki shorts serve in military uniform. So knickers made of coarse jail cloth and small pieces of cloth were placed before us, and we were ordered to wear them. We threw them away, saying that it was an insult to our religious sentiments and to compel us to wear those things. The jailer said, "How is an insult to your religious sentiments? You are giving us knickers instead of our kashere," I said. "If this is not deliberate insult to our religious sentiment, what else is?" "One of my assistants has come from the Punjab," the jailer says. "He says that these type of knickers are given in Punjab jails." "The kashere is a special type of shorts," I tell him, "which is one of the five-six symbols." Soon, there came the Punjabi assistant jailer, who, though apparently as a Sikh, was a renegade of Sikhism. Outside the prison, all Sikhs wear this type of knickers these days, the assistant jailer says. Bhai Kartar Singh replied, "Sikhs may be wearing knickers, but they do not call a knicker a kashere. It is all a concocted story. A Sikh cannot wear a knicker in place of a kashere. Soldiers sometimes wear official knickers over their kashere. You might have seen them wearing knickers, but not the kashere which they wear under it. We are not prepared to replace our kashere that we are wearing with these clumsy knickers." "I have seen many Akalis wearing knickers," the assistant jailer says. "During the Akali movement, I have seen them bathing with them." "Have you seen anyone wearing knickers or kashere?" the Bhai Kartar Singh said. The assistant jailer replied, "Some of them were wearing knickers, and some of them were wearing kashere also. After all, they are made of cloth. Why not call them knickers? A knicker is a knicker, and a kashere is a kashere," I tell him. "What is special about a kashere?" the assistant jailer asks. "I have to admit and face the fact that a knicker is not a kashere, and a knicker cannot be called as such. Young men like me call a knicker a kashere," the assistant jailer said. "What difference does it make? It is only a question of changing the name." "Your assertion is a false concoction, I tell him, which we do not accept. You are simply showing absurdity to your assertion. You are not stating the facts. How is it an abstinent and false assertion?" the assistant jailer asks. "You yourself called it a knicker," I said. "You know it as it is a knicker. And yet you want us to assume that it is a kashere. If this is not a false obstinate assertion, what else is it? If you had always considered it a kashere and did not think of it as anything but a kashere, then it was a different matter. But you have never really considered it a kashere. You still call it a knicker. But you insist that we should assume that it is a kashere. If this is not a false and obstinate assertion, what else is? A person like you may as well call a shirt by the name of a coat and assume a pajama to be a pant and a hat to be a turban. Merely making false and aggressive assertions will not turn a shirt into a coat, a pajama into a pant, and a hat into a turban." Addressing his assistant, the jailer said, "He's quite correct. I would certainly not call a hat a turban. What to say of calling a turban a hat? Your arguments, Babuji, have proved wrong in this matter." Annoyed, the assistant jailer said, But, sir, there is practically no difference between a knicker and a cachetto. I respond, if there is no difference, then why are they named differently, and why are they formed differently? Your conscience admits the difference, but you are not prepared to abandon the false position. The assistant jailer replies, I consider both to be one and the same, and that is why I do not differentiate between them. I tell him, and yet in your previous statements you admitted that some Sikhs wore knickers and others cachette. You still assume them to be two different things, but insist that one serves the purpose of the other. Although you consider them to be one and the same, and yet you deem them to be two different types of dresses. Angrily, after seeing the jailer smiling, the assistant jailer said, I mean, there is not much difference between the two. I reply, please bring your so-called knicker and compare it with my cachetta, which I use these days. They brought what they call knickers. Actually, they were what we call tambis, which are smaller underwear. They were much smaller than what were generally known as knickers. Europeans wear much larger knickers than those tambis. Punjabi knickers are only fashionable imitation of those European knickers. The half pants are much better than those tambis, which at least cover your body up to the knee. But these tambis are hardly of 9 inches length from the waist downwards. When placed side by side with our cachetta, they look very clumsy. Our cachetta, on the other hand, had a fall from the waist to about 2 inches above the knees. It was baggy and made out of 2.5 yard cloth, with a cloth strap to tie it at the waist. Its shape and style was that of a standard cachetta. When a Sikh wears it, he looks smart as a soldier. The tambi they were offering did not even cover the lower part of the body. It was a very tight underwear, without anything to tie it at the waist. With only tambis as the dress for the lower part of the body, we would have appeared half naked, like half naked clowns. As soon as a man sat after wearing it, he appeared shamelessly naked. After explaining all this, I asked him, Well now, tell me whether this is a tambi or a cachetta. Are they one and the same thing, and would you still use one and the same word for it? The assistant jailer was dumb and silent, but the jailer spoke. He said, shall we give you European type of knickers in place of these things? I hope you will have no objection to that. A European knicker would also be a knicker, I tell him. It will not be a cachetta. Mr. Jailer, we have no quarrel with you, nor can we compel you to do anything. A European knicker is a European dress, and good for you, but our dress is a cachetta, and that is what we want. If you do not wish to give us the cachetta, we can get them from our homes or from the Shromani Gurdwara Prabandhak Committee, but we will only wear our cachetta. We will not wear either the half pants or knickers, nor these tambis. If you do not give us the cachetta, we will continue to use the ones we are wearing now, and when they are worn out and not replaced, we will go on hunger strike. We do not do much work, so if there is a work strike, you will not worry about it. In all the prisons, we have been given the proper cachetta. Even in this jail, a British officer has been giving us a cachetta for the last 5 years. Now to annoy us and harass us, you are causing this trouble. How can these tambis and knickers ever be considered a cachetta of the Sikhs? Their size and style are as different from one another as that of the pajama and the pant, or a shirt and a coat. One cannot serve the purpose of the other. We will wear nothing other than the cachetta of the Sikh style. It is the only underwear known as the cachetta. This is the only one. Then the assistant jailer opened his mouth. He said, supposing we give you knickers of a large size, which you tie not with the belt but with the string, this will serve your purpose. The question here is not of serving the purpose, I tell him. What we want is our cachetta. Why give us knickers of greater length, and why not straight away give us pajama or salwars? If by merely tying a string to a knicker becomes a cachetta, then why not give us gagras with strings to serve the purpose of belts? You are only extending ugly arguments to cause trouble to us. What do you not get out of it? Kartar Singh, in addressing the jailer, said, "The SGPC has already sent you piles of kashetas for which you are keeping locked up. Better give them to us and save unnecessary expenditure of the government to prepare new ones." Angrily, the jailer replies, "Who told you that the SGPC has sent the kashetas for you? And they are lying with us. I do not know of any kasheta that has been received from anywhere. The kashetas sent by the Sikh organization are still lying in your office," Kartar Singh replies. "Not one or two, but more than 24. If you want to know where they are, I can accompany you and point out the almari in which they are locked up." The jailer was nonplussed. For a few moments, he was speechless. Faltering, he replied, "Well, Kartar Singh, do you have any spiritual powers to know of such things, or do you have some informer in the office who passes on the secrets of our office?" Kartar Singh replies, "The question of having informers or any particular occult powers does not arise. The very fact that you have questioned the source of my information proves that you have kasheta in the office. There is no shortage of kasheta, and we can use them for years. If what I say is wrong, and if you consider it an insult to have your almari search, then permit us to inquire from the SGPC whether they have sent any kashetas for us or not. If they have sent, then why and how many were sent? We will know the truth." The jailer said, "The superintendent has given strict orders not to give you anything sent by private organizations. Even if we have received any kashetas, we cannot issue them to you. You will get them at the cost of the government." Kartar Singh said, "All right, then give us at the cost of the government. You must, however, return the kashetas to the SGPC, which the SGPC has sent you." The jailer said, "We will give you striped cloth made in jail, then you can get them stitched by the prison tailor." I tell him, "We have no objection to the cloth made in the prison, but it should not be striped. It should be plain cloth of the type issued to us before. It should also not be very coarse." The jailer said, "If you object to the stripes, we will remove them all." "How will you do that?" I said. "We will color them black," he said. So you will get plain cloth without stripes." "By plain, we mean that it should not be colored," I replied, "nor should it be striped or checkered." "Then we object to stripes. When we object to stripes and color designs on the cloth, how can we accept colored cloth for kashere?" The assistant jailer replies, All the Akalis wear black kasheres nowadays." By Kartar Singh said, "They wear black colored turbans, but they certainly do not wear black kasheres." "I saw them wearing black kasheres," the assistant jailer said, "only a week ago." "We do not believe it, nor is your assertion worth believing," Pralay Kartar Singh replied. To this, the jailer said, "Supposing we secure from SGPC Amritsar permission to allow you to wear black kashetas, then what?" "If both Akal Takht Amritsar and Takht Hazur Sahib Nader issue orders to us to wear black kashetas, then we will wear them at once," I tell him. By Kartar Singh, in addressing me, said, Bhai Sahib, "Do you think Akal Takht can ever ask the Sikhs to wear black kashere? These people are concocting misleading stories. How can we trust these people that they would ever inquire from the Akal Takht? They may even forge a hukumnama and show it to us." I said, in addressing Kartar Singh, "It is possible that they can concoct a number of stories, but I do not believe that they will be able to forge the seal and signatures of the jathedars of the Takhts." By Kartar Singh said, "That is right." In addressing the jailer, "Do you accept the proposal, Jailer Sahib?" The jailer replies, "We shall not only write to them, but inquire from the Jathedar telegraphically about the matter." Bhai Kartar Singh said, "But you must mention the name of Bhai Sahib Ranthir Singh. You must make it clear that Bhai Sahib Ranthir Singh and his companion object to wearing black kashere." The jailer accepted the proposal, and within a week, we were shown the new orders, stating that we would be given the type of kashetas we want. We had come to know that this decision was in our favor, but we did not know who convinced them. Victory was ours. In this fight, for a right to wear one of her important six symbols. We always had troublesome disputes with the jail authorities about letters and interviews with visitors. They were never sincere or true to their promise and assurances. They never gave us the facilities to write to our relatives, to which all political prisoners were entitled. We were given letters written to us by our relatives after censoring them, and after keeping them in their office for 3 months, what to speak or permitting meeting with the members of our family. During 7 or 8 years of imprisonment in Nagpur prison, I was allowed to meet my wife and children only once. Bhai Kartar Singh was not permitted to meet his relatives even once. I was also allowed to see them once with every possible obstruction and annoyance at the time of meeting. I was given solemn promises that I would be given sufficient time to meet my wife and children, but at the time of the meeting, the mischievous superintendent and the jailer suddenly changed their attitude. My little children, who had never seen me for years and did not recognize me, as they were too young when I was imprisoned, traveled hundreds of miles with their sorrowful mother with the hope that they would be able to meet their dear father for a few hours and feel the warmth of his embrace and love. They had been given assurances that they would be given free time to meet and talk to me. It was a sad thing that their desire to meet me freely could not be fulfilled. The superintendent had assured me also that just as I was given about 4 hours to meet my wife at the Hazaribagh prison, I would be given ample time to talk to them. I had made it very clear to him that my wife's application to meet me should be accepted only if she was given ample time to talk to me, otherwise it was not necessary. I had not met my children for many years, and this being the first meeting, it was essential that it should be purposeful. The superintendent gave his word of honor that he would allow us to meet freely, but he went back on his word and broke his solemn promise. After long years of painful separation came the day when I was to see my little ones and my wife. Bhai Sundar Singh of village Kumran in district Ludhiana escorted my dear wife and children, whom long separation had made a tragic picture of sorrow and suffering extending from the banks of Satluj in Ludhiana to Nagpur, which for me had been the city of Nagas, of snakes. But as soon as they came to the Nagpur prison, the Yama of the prison, the superintendent, stood in their way like a hooded cobra. In Nagpur, there was a locality known as Punjabi Lines. The residents of this locality were mostly Punjabis. There was a Gurdwara in the Punjabi Lines. Tourists and travelers generally stayed in the Punjabi Lines. It was in the Punjabi Lines that my wife and children had to stay after reaching Nagpur. But the mischievous superintendent spread out thorns on their way all around the city to make their movement difficult. CID men and prison sentry were posted all the way from Punjabi Lines to Nagpur jail. There were police pickets to watch their movements everywhere. A special police picket was posted near the house of Bhai Mansha Singh of Punjabi Lines. Bhai Mansha Singh helped and looked after the needs of every visitor from Punjab. He entertained most of them in his own house with unusual zeal and hospitality. The whole family was disciplined in the noble ideal of selfless service, Nishkam Seva. This Gurmukh family was overjoyed to learn that the wife and children of the patriot who had suffered so much for 12 long years in prison had come far from Punjab. He already had a deep love for me. Even before my family reached Nagpur, he made up his mind to lodge my wife and children in his own house. He did not care a fig for police pickets. He did not fear the jail authorities. Determined to render the utmost help to the innocent and helpless visitors from the Punjab, he went to receive them on the station. When my wife came to know that a police picket had been posted at the residence of Bhai Mansha Singh, and the authorities were prepared to annoy and harass everyone who helped them, they decided to stop in the house of a young overseer from Narangwar, my home village, named Sadar Mohinder Singh. This overseer, being a government servant, was not at all suspected. He received my family with great joy and hospitable warmth. Knowing the harassment caused by Mansha Singh for helping me, the brave and heroic soul by Sardar Mohinder Singh took all risks and not only entertained them with great respect and devotion, but even took the risk of accompanying them to the prison for interview. During those days, it was unusually heroic act for a government servant to dare meet a freedom fighter like me, who was listed as the most dangerous revolutionary, arrested under Section 121. When he interviewed me, two Punjabi CID inspectors, one Hindu and the other Muslim, sat opposite him, flanking me on both sides. Immediately after meeting a strong police picket was posted outside Sardar Mohinder Singh's house. They even threatened to search his house, where Sardar Mohinder Singh fearlessly looked after my wife and children. The police harassed and annoyed those who had come to meet, even those who had entertained them. But no one was in the least worried about police threats, and continued to look after my wife and children with unswerving devotion. Those who saw the meeting organized between me and my family were sorely grieved and shocked. While making arrangements, they appeared to give great importance to it. A huge table was placed in the reception room and chairs placed on both sides. The jailer sat at the head of the table in a huge chair. Those who came to meet were seated on the right side. Opposite them was a chair placed for me. Around me sat CID officers and members of the jail and staff. At first, my wife and children, who were accompanied by Bhai Sundar Singh and Sardar Mohinder Singh, were seated on the table. As soon as I entered the room, the CID officers occupied their chairs. A chair in between them was reserved for me. As soon as I entered the room, they stood up. I moved up to embrace my son, Balbir Singh, who was about 14 years old, and my 10-year-old daughter, Daler Kaur. But the cruel jailer placed his arms and legs across a passage through which I intended to move the other side of the table to bless my dear ones. I was shocked and asked, "Why would you not allow me to even embrace my children or even bless them? What is the meaning of all this? I have seen them after 11 or 12 years. They were little suckling babies when I was imprisoned. How is it that I cannot give a little love to them in this first meeting?" The jailer said sternly, "You cannot bestow any love on them, nor can you embrace them. You can only see and touch them from a distance. Do not go near them." On seeing my eyes flaming with anger, I cannot help it. "Such are the orders. Do not be angry with me." I'd ask, "Whose orders are these?" "These are the orders of the superintendent," he replied. "Go to his room, and if you secure his order to allow you to meet freely, I will have no objection whatsoever. I hurriedly went straight to the superintendent. Two sipais accompanied me. Without even knocking at the door, I lifted the curtain and hastily entered the room where the prison yama was sitting. Seeing me enter his room in hot haste, without his permission, his face became pale. "What does this all mean?" I asked. "Can I not even embrace my little ones, and so much as even touch them, or even bless them? Is it you who have issued such a heartless and cruel order? Have you arranged a meeting, or do you want the matter to take a tragic turn? I am not prepared to be satisfied with such a meeting which you have arranged. You must order the jailers to stop all this." I have given him all the necessary orders," the superintendent said. "I have authorized him to give whatever concessions he wants on his own. I am not prepared to issue new orders to him now." I say, "This means that you are responsible for such cruel and callous attitude. It is you who have given such strict orders." The superintendent replied, "I have already told you that I have given him full powers to arrange a meeting between you and your kith and kin. I am not prepared to interfere in his arrangement. I am not prepared to discuss the matter any more. Go and have your meeting with your people and do not waste time." I came back and addressed the jailer. "The superintendent has given you full powers and he does not wish to interfere in your arrangements. So tell me So now tell me, what will you allow me to meet my wife and children as you promised or not? In an officious tone, the jailer replies, All right, first talk to them, and then you can give your love and to your children. Sit down quietly on the chair and talk to them. Both the CID officers in one voice replied, Sardar Sahib, now you can sit down and talk to your people. The jailer has promised you, and you can now give your love and blessings to your children later on. In addressing the CID officers, I replied, You can never trust these jail authorities. They have dishonored many such promises. The inspectors replied, We will now support you. We are responsible for it. You better talk to your people and do not waste your precious time. At the request of the CID inspectors, I sat down to talk to my wife and friends who accompanied her. They also sat down. So far, they had kept standing. I had hardly inquired about their welfare when, after about 15 minutes, the jailer took out his watch and said that half an hour was over. He had included even the 15 minutes wasted in my attempt to remind them of their solemn promise. I tell him, You have hardly given us 15 minutes. You have included even the 15 minutes wasted in dispute over the matter in which the meeting was arranged. I am not blamed for it, the jailer said. You wasted the time. We have been sitting in this room for half an hour. Ordinary prisoners are only given 15 minutes. I ask him, You promised that you would give me a good deal of time, just as I was given in Hazaribagh prison. The jailer replied, About the promise, ask the superintendent. I was ordered only to give you half an hour. I tell him, You were also there when you assured me that free time would be given to meet my people. Both of you gave a solemn promise, and now you are going back on it. I am duty-bound, he said, to obey the superintendent. I have to obey by his orders. You can go to him and ask him for more time. I again went to the superintendent's office and sternly said to him, Shame indeed on your broken promises. If I knew it, I would never have asked my people to come from such a long distance. You urged me to invite my wife and children to meet me and assured me that I would be given ample time to talk to them. Encouraged by this assurance, I sent a telegram to my wife through you. Unfortunately, neither do I have your promise in writing nor a copy of the telegram with which I could put you to shame. What is the matter now? The superintendent said. Why are you so angry? Why should I not be wrathful? I asked. It is your heartless and cruel attitude that has inflamed me. But what is the matter? He said. I reply. He has given me only 15 minutes. The jailer said that you have ordered him to allow only this much time. Well then, Dheer Singh, he said, I have given full powers. If he wants, he can give you more time. You promised to arrange this meeting, I asked, and give ample time for it. Well, Ranthir Singh, the superintendent replies, my position is very awkward. If something happens, I will be finished. I am, after all, an Indian. What matters if I am posted as superintendent? Surely you do not want me to lose my job. You know what happened when Master Murtaza Singh's relatives came to meet him. Long articles were even published against us. I saved my skin with great difficulty. Even God fears you people. Go and settle the issue with the jailer. He is an Englishman. He will handle the matter as he likes. If he gives you more time, take it with gentle approach. I reply, I am not going to beg him for more time, nor am I going to appeal to him again. I have to fight for my rights. Remember, you people will have to suffer bitterly for all this injustice, cruelty, and callousness. So saying, I came out of the room. By the time I came back, the jailer had softened a bit. On the recommendation of the CID inspectors, I was allowed to talk for 15 more minutes. But what could I talk in so few minutes and seconds? How could a heart filled with the years of separation from my dear ones express itself within 15 minutes? We were not allowed to discuss national matters and Panthic problems. We could not even talk about important family matters. We were frequently cross-questioned about the people we talked about, and thus we could not talk freely even about our kith and kin. As soon as 15 minutes were over, we were asked to part immediately. We were so overwhelmed by the pangs of sudden meeting and cruel separation again that we even forgot to greet each other. All that we could do was look into each other's sorrowful eyes with poignant sorrow of this short meeting, cruelly broken up. I was not allowed to embrace my son and daughter. All I could do was stretch my hand across the table and bless them. The one desire of my children, to embrace their father, remained unfulfilled. I could not shake hands with my friends, Bhai Sundar Singh and Sardar Mohinder Singh, controlling their grief at the cruel separation and suppressing their sorrowful emotion. With great difficulty, all of them moved out of the reception room. My son and daughter looked back at me with sorrowful, innocent eye until they were out of sight. Overwhelmed with the pathetic situation and wounded deeply by poignant pain of the short meetings, I was brought back to my dark cell. This Vairag deepened my concentration on the Divine Name, and I meditated on His presence with renewed inspiration. The intoxicating love that had been made more painful by the piercing wounds of separation of the dear ones intensified the spiritual practice of His Divine Presence. Wave after wave of divine inspiration helped my mind to soar far and above the mundane world into the higher sphere of cosmic consciousness. The mind that was hankering for love and union now soared into the bliss of infinite love in its solitary search for His ennobling presence. I sat in the blissful poise of this Sajya Samadhi till it was time for evening prayers. I recited the Dedas, and when I came down to normal consciousness, and then performed the Ardas in a lovelorn joy which one rarely enjoys. Once more, I began to think of my little ones. I could see their innocent eyes piercing deep into my soul. With my inner vision of spiritual insight, I saw them sad and brooding gloomily over their unfulfilled desires. They were reflecting over the mental agony of the cruel separation. As their spiritual insight was still unawakened, they felt very sad and lonely. I procured a pen and paper and started writing a letter to my wife and children. In that lovelorn condition, I wrote many pages, hardly knowing how it would be possible to send a letter to them. Having written the letter, I was reflecting as to how the letter could be sent to them, when suddenly God helped me and sent an angelic person to the difficult task in a unique way. Those were very difficult times. Their great precautions and stringent steps were taken to create difficulties and obstructions for everyone who even thought of us. It was quite dark when I suddenly saw a man standing close to the bars of my cell. He was wearing grey-coloured clothes to avoid being easily spotted out. I recognized him to be Dr. Mansukh, our medical officer. I was wonderstruck to see such a responsible officer come to see me at this time of night, and taking such a serious risk. I could not believe that the purpose of his visit was anything other than expressing his deep-felt sympathy for me. Surprised greatly, I spoke to him. "What brings you here, my dear and noble friend," I asked, "and well-wisher at this time of night?" Dr. Mansukh replies, "Great and glorious indeed is your brave heart and powers of endurance. Only with such a big and courageous heart and soul you have faced terrible ordeals in the prison for your country. Otherwise, who else could? Your meeting with your wife and children today had a pathetic effect on all eyewitnesses," he said. For hours I could not control my tears. Even now, when I think of that pathetic moment, I cannot control my tears. I am also a father. I have lovely little children who cannot bear separation from me even for a day. Whenever I go home, after doing my office duties, they cling to me and do not leave me as long as I do not give them my love. How brave are your little children who have not seen you or met you for 11 long years, and now, when they have had an opportunity to meet you, they could not embrace you, feel the warmth of your arms and cling of their father's breast. Even after 12 years, they did not have the satisfaction of talking to you, telling you of their plight in their sweet, innocent language. Feeling the cooling joy of their father's love, great indeed is the heart and soul of these children. My heart breaks and my soul leaps out in agony at the very thought of their sorrow. O brave patriot and saint soldier of the heroic community, believe me that this superintendent and jailer are the most inhumane butchers who take brutal delight in the slow torture of human beings. Before they kill anyone, they take a sadistic delight in seeing him groan under torture. Their conscience is dead. There's not a trace of pity or compassion for the suffering of their people in their hearts. Even now, my heart is full of sorrow. If you wish to convey any message to your people, let me know. I will take it personally. I reply, I am extremely grateful for you, for your sympathy. God has sent you here at this very opportune moment. But I hesitate to put a noble sympathizer like you in trouble, or take any risk for my sake. Just tell me what is to be done, he said, and I will do it, even at the risk of my life. My noble and compassionate friend, I reply, there are police pickets all around, and every crossing on the way. How will you reach the place without being questioned or searched? Please tell me where I am to go, Dr. Mansukh said. Do you want me to go to the place where they are staying? Do not worry about me. Wherever they are, I will go like lightning and find them and convey your message. I know that there are police pickets everywhere, right up to their house. But I will disguise myself, go on bicycle when it is pitch dark, and pass through the police pickets like lightning. I will go at all cost, even if I have to go in the middle of the night. I was delighted to see his courage and know his plan. I handed over to him the letter which I had written, which he had hid in his secret pocket. He held my hand warmly, and then placed it on his head in tender affection, and sought my blessing, and then quietly went away. The letters which I had sent out through him, or even those sent later through the authorities, would be of great interest for the devotees of truth. The cruelty and brutality of the prison authorities is vividly painted in them. To soothe us down a bit, and to calm down our wrath on not allowing us to meet our relatives, the prison authorities suddenly give us permission to write long letters to our homes. We could write everything in those letters, provided nothing was written against the jail authorities. We were permitted to write only 2 letters in 3 months. Even if I wrote letters of 30 pages, the jailer did not object. After showing inhuman cruelty, they now wanted to create a good impression, but they sent these long letters after getting them censored. Those who censored the letters actually could not read them. They were expected to translate the whole letter word by word, but it was an impossible task for them. Only one who was expert in reading and translating Punjabi language in Gurmukhi script could translate them. After finding the task impossible, they sent a brief and superficial summaries of the letters to the authorities without actually reading them. The result was that we were able to write anything we liked, even against the prison authorities. One difficulty was that the letters were detained for a long time by the censor department. Only when we sent a number of reminders were they sent to the deputy commissioner to be posted to our people. Their replies were also received through the deputy commissioner after being censored. Thus, a reply to the letter was received after about 3 months. And it is only after 3 months we were allowed to write another 2 letters. We objected to these long delays and even reported the matter to official and non-official visitors. We demanded that at least the letters written to our wives should not be censored. No one took the matter seriously. Verbal and formal promises were given, but no one took up the matter. Anyway, by the grace of the Guru, days passed in inward peace and in high spirits. We'd never submitted to the coercion or threat. We overlooked many atrocities perpetuated by the jail authorities, but at times we had to take stern action to expose their brutalities. A woman prisoner, undergoing imprisonment for 4 years, gave birth to an illegal child. The face and eyes of the child revealed that it was an offspring of a white man. The Indian members of the prison were terribly shocked, but they were afraid to bring the matter to the notice of the higher authorities. They grumbled and moaned the tragic incident, but dare not tell anyone. At last they sought our help and told us the story. On hearing about this terrible affair, we were greatly shocked and stunned. We were determined to fight and expose these people. During these days, Master Morta Singh also was brought to our prison for about a year. He also endured great hardships, but he lived in the prison fearlessly, fighting against injustice. He was shocked to hear the story and was restless. He was about to take a very strong line, but requested him to allow us to probe the matter. With great difficulty, we convinced him that we should first bring up the matter to the notice of the superintendent. When the superintendent came on a round, we warned him that horrible things were happening in this jail. We would not tolerate such bestial cruelty and ill treatment of innocent Indian female prisoners. The superintendent sidetracked the issue by saying that the woman was suffering from abdominal tumor, that there was nothing wrong. But falsehood has no footing. We might have believed it to be a tumor case, but on the third day, suddenly, we received another shocking news that the illegal child had been murdered at night, and early next morning, he was burned to ashes. We also heard the weeping of the woman from the female ward of the prison. Now we were convinced of what had actually happened. We were now waiting for the prison officers to take them to task when they came on around. We were aflame with uncontrollable anger over such inhuman cruelty. We soon saw the superintendent and his staff coming towards us and discussing some matter between themselves. We overheard a little conversation between the deputy superintendent and the jailer about the incident, which was as followed. The deputy superintendent says, "When we went to the female ward on a round, the child was hale and hearty. How is it that he died suddenly at night?" The jailer replied, "The matron has reported that the child was sleeping with the mother, and in her sleep, the mother crushed the child under her body while taking a turn on the bed." The deputy superintendent replied, "That is unbelievable. Such a thing can never happen." The deputy superintendent had just uttered these words when he came close to us, so we decided to take him to task. I tell him, "So the tumor case really happened to be an illegal child, and now you cruel people have murdered him at night. After committing one crime after another, you now wish to get away by saying that the mother crushed the child under her body in sleep while taking a turn on her bed. Even animals do not kill their little ones like that, and you wish us to believe that an Indian mother did it. Have you ever heard that even a cow or any animal crushing her offspring under her body? Do you think a woman can be so careless that she cannot take care of her child lying by her side? It is all a concocted story. How long will you hide your sins and crimes? We are now receiving news that the sick month is trying for a release, and we will be released soon enough. We will not let this story be hushed up and become stale. We will charge you with the most gruesome murder. The punishment you are bound to receive in the other world, where the justice of God would certainly fall on your crimes, is a thing apart." Interrupting, the superintendent says, "Only fools believe in the justice of God and punishment in the other world. You will be in our grip for the rest of your life. Give up the vain hope that your punt will get you a release. The British government is very powerful. It will keep you in prison for all your natural life." In referring to me, he said, "Give up all hopes of being released. You are receiving false reports and hopes of your early release. If you behave properly with us, your life in prison will be easier. But if you spoil your relations with us, you will face untold hardships and troubles. It is criminals like you who will suffer," Master Morta Singh said, "that you will suffer humiliation and the worst punishment for your sins and crimes. We will see that you are punished for your crimes in this world only. If Bhai Sahib Brintir Singh is imprisoned for life, I will be released soon enough. It is quite possible that he may be released much earlier than me, but it is quite certain that I shall be released soon. If we are helpless about the matter here in prison, we will take you people to task as soon as we get out of jail. We will charge you with murder in the court. Can you ever escape the punishment of such a gruesome murder?" On hearing the thundering threat of Master Morta Singh, the superintendent and jailer slinked away. They did not stop for a moment. While going away the lame superintendent said, "Mota Singh, I will see that neither you nor your companions are released." Dragging his limping leg, he went away with his staff. After a few days, they instituted a case against Master Mota Singh for secretly sending communications outside, and his imprisonment was increased by 6 months. But while appearing in the court for that case, he exposed the crimes of the prison officials and put on records the court the whole story of the birth of an illegal child and his murder soon after that. However, we learned later on that no one took any serious action against them. We learned from the jailer that he was downgraded for another 3 years in connection with this case. Master Mota Singh was deported to Burma. After some time, when Dr. Neelkantha Jatar, the superintendent, was transferred, and on September or October 1928, when Mr. H.L. Khan was appointed the superintendent, I was also accused of sending a letter to my relatives outside, and my life imprisonment was increased by 6 months. To us, who were imprisoned for life, this did not mean or matter anything. The evil mongers did their worst, and for us it did not make any difference. By the will of God, my release had been delayed, but for those who took indecent delight in the crime and inhuman punishment of the prisoners were bound to suffer the worst punishment in the court of the just God. Guru Nanak speaks in the Asadivar, "Justice is meted out to everyone. Sinners are singled out for punishment. They find no asylum or escape. Humiliated, they are cast into hell." The hobbling superintendent, Dr. Jatar, indeed committed such inhuman crimes that some of them are too shocking to be described. He will certainly be punished, and with his face blackened, he will certainly be cast into hell. I will relate only one more incident. There were many prisoners of low caste tribes known as the Bhils or Gond, and were mostly cobblers, but to do the work of sweepers, cleaners and of lanterns was not their profession. They were forced to carry buckets full of feces and excretion. They considered it the worst humiliation to do such dirty work. They lodged innumerable protests pointing out that the bungies should be employed for this purpose, and they should not be forced to do such filthy work, but all fell on deaf ears. One day, Bhai Kartar Singh and I were locked in a barrack, through the large windows of which we could see the prison office. The superintendent was going on his daily round, and one Ramji Das, a Chamar prisoner, was presented to the superintendent. He was accused of refusing to do the work of bungies. The officer, whose reporting was a Shia Muslim, in addressing this Jamal, the superintendent said, "Well, why do you refuse to do the work of a bungi?" I said, "Sir, it is not my profession. That is why I refuse to do this work." The superintendent said, "Whose work is it?" "Sir," the prisoner asks, "it is a job of the bungis." The superintendent says, "Then who do you think you are?" "Sir, I'm a Chamar," the prisoner said. "You can ask me to do any leather work. I will make and mend shoes. You can get any work done from me in the leather factory. I will not do the work of a pungi." "Will you not obey my orders?" the superintendent said. Humbly, the prisoner replies, "Sir, I find it difficult to obey this order. You can make me obey any other order." "I will make you obey this very order and get this very work done," the superintendent replies. The prisoner said, "Sir, this will be excessive cruelty on a poor man like me." In addressing the warder, the superintendent said, "No one should listen to his protests. Use force and make him obey the orders and compel him to do the work of the bungies." He was first beaten, then 5 or 6 bungies threw buckets full of feces and filth on his body. When he refused to do the filthy work, he was ordered to be thrown into a drum of filth and feces. But the men failed to push him down into the drum. He resisted stoutly with his legs. When he was out of control, a number of men stretched him on the ground and sat on his body and poured the drum of feces, urine, and filth on his head, and even attempted to put some of it in his mouth. We could not control ourselves. We came out of ourselves and threatened to punish them. We shouted at warder Manohar Lal, who was carrying out this filthy torture. "You dirty devil," we said. "Do you dare to do all this in our presence? Stop it at once, otherwise it will go hard with you." On hearing our threat, everyone turned pale and slinked away, taking Ramji Das with them. The poor man's life was saved from further torture. We have not been able to forget this horrible sight up till now. Many peels were flogged and forced to do this dirty work. There are so many awful stories of the hellish treatment accorded to helpless prisoners that it is difficult to describe them all. There was a Mazbi Sikh named Hardial Singh who was forced to do this dirty work, but we secured him the right to wear the Sikh dress. A million grateful thanks to the blessed organization, the Shiromani Gurdwara Prabandhak Committee, and the Sikh Panth, by whose infinite kindness I have been given renewed inspiration. I am a sacrifice unto this great day. February 1st, 1923, when the whole Sikh Panth prayed for me, and this little creature, frail in body and spirit, was given boundless spiritual inspiration and courage. I am beholden every moment for that sacred moment when the noble and enlightened Sikhs everywhere offered a prayer which destroyed all suffering and had such a magnetic effect on my disillusioned mind that the dead miraculously came to life. Otherwise, the oil in this frail body had very nearly been exhausted, and the flame was flickering and was about to be blown out. I felt the miraculous influence of the prayer of the Sikh Panth in the prison particularly, when I was about to say my evening prayer, when suddenly my whole inner being was ablaze with strong spiritual waves from the unknown. Little did I know that every man, woman, and child of the Sikh Panth was concentrating on a fervent prayer for me, and their spirit was inwardly unison with my lonely soul, and their heart was beating for me. Like an electric current, this blessing from the unknown stimulated my soul. Whenever such a thing happens, I generally note the day and time. I particularly noted the evening of February 1st, 1923. It was a time to recite Eras, but I came to know of the actual happenings from your affectionate letter and a poster through which the day was announced, sent along with your letter. I was wonderstruck and felt exalted when the date and time sent by you coincided exactly with which was noted by me. So exalted and illuminated, I felt that the sublime joy is unforgettable. It has indeed brought the dead to life. With the spiritual support I have received through this national prayer, not only will my soul remain strong, but this body will safely complete the wheel of its destiny. So now, all my friends, brothers, seekers of truth, members of my family, and relatives, the leaders and enlightened seers of the Sikh Panth should completely cease to worry about me. Because of the prayer offered by the Sikh Panth for me, not a hair of my body will suffer injury. When the Sikh Panth has taken me under its protective grace, through this prayer, all my sorrow and suffering, physical and mental, have departed. I, a humble creature, really did not deserve the honor and affection bestowed on me by the Sikh Panth. This compassion of the Sikh Panth, a deep sympathy for me, gives a perpetual joy and courage. I am convinced, by the grace of the Guru and the Sangat, all my search will find fulfillment. Dear brother, I agree with you, your noble words written on your letter, that it is all by the will of God. Of this I am quite convinced. I have been hearing this voice within me, but your letter has confirmed the truth. Who are these people who would inflict suffering on their own and harm me? I did not take this inner voice very seriously before. Now I feel it within my heart and soul, and I am convinced of the truth. Cry, Lord, Lord, and remain not unconscious of him. This is a precious message to me indeed, with which you have blessed me. I cannot boast that I can ever achieve this state of concentration, but by the grace of the Guru and the Sangha, it is not difficult to achieve. May the Guru give you every pore of my body 100 tongues, and each tongue repeat the name of God 1,000,000 times, till I am completely lost in the one name of the Lord. And thus my concentration on His presence may go far beyond, and not being unconscious of Him. But unto unbroken samadhi of His inner vision, it is for that supreme state that I seek blessings. May I go far beyond the state of Kshatriks' thirst, and cry for a drop of rain water, to the satiation of in torrents of rain and divine grace. Inscrutable and agonizing is the will of God. Who knows His will indeed? Those on whom He showers His grace and mercy are able to abide by His will. Who knows what pleases the God? What am I? Only an insignificant creature. The Guru and the Sangat alone can save me. It is the saving grace and affection of the Guru. What else could impel the Sangat to pray for me? It is I who have been deprived of the Sangat. I am thirsting for the presence of the Gurdwara, of the Gurudeva, the Guru Granth Sahib, like a papiha. Under the veil of His inscrutable will, men like Baba Ram Singh, the Naam Tari leader, have disappeared forever and never came back. What am I, a poor creature? Baba Ram Singh was unfortunately deprived of the loving grace of the Sikh Panth. I am more fortunate than him in this respect, that the Guru Panth has deep concern for me. Whenever the Guru Panth needs me, it will acquire my services. With the loving grace of the Sikh Panth bestowed on me, I deem myself most fortunate. If I still think of myself as unlucky, it will be very grateful of me. But God and His created Sikh Panth are compassionate on ungrateful persons also. The mighty armed inspiration inspires mighty faith. I have kept with me the copy of the Shabd, which was recited after the Panthic prayers for me. You have brought so many things for me, but it is pity that fate does not allow me to use them. If you had come and met me at Rajamundri prison, I would have acquired everything. You could have met me as freely as you met me in Hazaribagh. The officers of Rajamundri prison were quite generous. Although they were Europeans, they were very noble indeed. They treated me with great respect and treated me as a saint. When I left the Rajamundri prison, they gave me yellow turban, which I am now wearing, as a gift. The 1 year which I spent at Rajamundri prison was a year of great freedom and joy. Rajamundri was indeed a Rajamandir, a temple of freedom, for us. But God had ordained the troubles and tortures of this jail also. So be it. Sorrow and joy are thy will, O Lord. If thou givest joy and happiness, I will think of thee. If thou givest sorrow and suffering, I will still think of thee. Letter 2. I am convinced that the new gentleman who has come is Master Mota Singh. He has been sent here from Lalpur jail. The jail authorities have started torturing him also, just as they tried to compel us to stand up with his hands stretched out and say, Salam Sahib, like slaves and beggars. He is also compelled to do so. This is the order from which trouble has started with us. But Master Mota Singh is a brave and fearless patriot. He is not afraid of facing physical suffering. His troubles will increase. God alone knows what may happen. Here the conditions are worse than what they were even in Ugzar Aurangzeb Raj. All three of us are kept far apart. If you inform some members of the local council about the inhuman treatment accorded to the prisoners, then it is quite possible that Master Mota Singh might be saved from the cruelty we had to undergo, and no injury may be caused to his faith. Letter 3. What is the use of taking legal action against these people? I leave everything to the court of the Lord. He is the one who will justify, punish the bad, and reward the good. What is the use of taking revenge through law courts? I had to tell you everything. The manuscript of the book, which I wrote, is in the possession of the superintendent. He assured me that he would return it after getting read. He has promised to keep it safely. He cannot confiscate it. When he calms down, he will return it. Nagpur jail has turned out to be the dwelling of nagas, of snakes. although they succeeded in breaking my vow by force. But the concentration and contemplation of divine name has deepened. My spirits soar high in the height to the highest bliss and aesthetic joy. The inward sorrow of being forced to break my vows has indeed upset me, and I am grieved about it. But the inner illumination and spiritual exaltation has helped me to regain my poise. Soon, when I am completely absorbed in bliss of spiritual joy, traces of this sorrow will disappear. That day will be indeed a blessed day. But it appears on that day I may also be tempted to discard my body, and if God does not will it otherwise. May God bring that day closer, when my light blends completely with His light. Convey this message to my friends, dear brother, that, as Guru Nanak writes, the years and the sacred day for the wedding is fixed. Comrades, pour oil on that door to welcome the bride. Give me your blessings, O friends. I depart for my union with God. It is with such blessings of saintly souls that I, a dweller of the lower worlds, may be liberated. My strong request is that no one should come to meet me. The Sangat has already taken a lot of trouble for me. A friend named Bhai Raghbir Singh also came to meet me from Punjab, but was not allowed to meet. Perhaps you know that Master Mota Singh is also subjected to untold torture, but he is kept far apart. Even Bhai Kartar Singh is kept far apart. I have written and sent you my life story, but you say that you have not received it. This has surprised me greatly. Now I end the letter here. Letter 4. I have been delighted to know that the Panth has undertaken to clean the pond of the Golden Temple. Blessed are the Sikhs who have an opportunity to serve them in that divine service, God Seva. Blessed and fortunate are you all, the Guru said. He who has served to dig pond are beyond praise for their noble service. We in the prison here feel ourselves to be most fortunate for not being able to participate in the holy task, and for the first time in my life I feel the burden of a misfortune that has deprived me of this service. Some evil lot of the past karma appears to have deprived me of this sacred opportunity to serve the Guru. One gets the opportunity to serve the Panth in many ways, but this opportunity comes once in many years. And when the opportunity had come after many years, I am brooding gloomily over my misfortune in jail, while I congratulate my blessed brothers who have gotten opportunity to serve the Golden Temple. I am in deep agony over the thought that I am unable to do the slightest service in this divine service. Reflecting on the wheel of my karma, I find solace only in the inner peace of His will. Even if I had been given a little opportunity to do this service, I might have spent my days in peace, but here I am quite helpless. It appears that the Lord of my destiny has willfully thrown me into the oven of suffering. Up till now, even sorrows and sufferings were sweet, and I endured all the agony and separation without complaining. But today, I feel actually the pang and consequence of this separation. It is indeed a miserable life led in the burning oven of separation. Blessed are you all, and fortunate too. Take the utmost benefit of this opportunity. Why should it disturb your peace of mind with my sorrow and agony at this moment? But I could not help giving expression to it. My congratulations to you all for the opportunity that you have got. I am extremely glad that the government has handed over the keys of the Golden Temple, the Darbar Sahib, to the leaders of the Sikh Panth. Letter number 5. I have just heard an unconfirmed news that in imitation of other patriots, many Sikhs also cite slogans like Gandhi Ki Jai, Lajpat Rai Ki Jai, etc. If this is correct, then it is a very shameful thing to do so. We Sikhs never glorify any human being, and we seek the support and invoke the help in all our works to God only. If we glorify man and invoke his strength, we will never succeed. God and God alone can help us. Our gurus placed us under the protective grace of God and left it to the Almighty, to the Mother of the Khalsa. We praise and remember God only, and we are not supported to glorify any man. Our slogan is Sat Sri Akal. True and glorious is the immortal Lord. The perfect and all-powerful Sikh Gurus never ask the Sikhs to glorify their name or shout slogans in their name. They never named the Sikh Panth after their name. They called it the Panth of the Almighty. If the disciples of such a Panth, whose spiritual roots are in the spirit supreme and immortal being, stoop so low as to glorify ordinary human beings and shout slogans in the name of petty politicians, then these Sikhs are bringing disgrace and bad name to the high ideals of Guru Gobind Singh. It is against the teachings of the Savior of the Panth. Let everyone reflect, did Guru Gobind Singh ever ask his disciples to shout such slogans? Guru Gobind Singh ki jai. Throughout Sikh history, Sikh armies, jathas, congregations never shouted such slogans as Guru Gobind Singh ji ki jai. The strict command of the Gurus was to glorify only God. He taught again and again, clearly and firmly, that in every work we do, and for seeking inspiration for every cause, we should seek to the support of God alone. It is this high and noble ideal which makes her faith pure and unique and worthy of being called Khalsa. Guru Gobind Singh was all-powerful and perfect being, yet he never asked his Sikhs to glorify his name and shout slogans in his name. He did not even name the Panth after his own name. He gave us the greeting, Vaheguru Ji Ka Khalsa and Vaheguru Ji Ki Fateh. The Khalsa seeks the protection of the Almighty God, victory unto the Almighty God. This was the lesson that he taught us, that we belong to God and we should glorify and shout the victory of God alone. Whatever is done by us should always be done by seeking the grace of God. We are not to follow other people and glorify petty human beings. We are to participate with other communities for the common fight for freedom and dharma. But we have to do it on the moral and high spiritual ideals and principles set down for us. In our history, the great heroes of the Sikh Panth have already set many noble examples for us, and we have to abide by those. Our aim is not to seek political power, but to eliminate slavery and despotism. Swarja, for us, does not mean capturing power and enjoying the luxury of high living, but to establish the rule of Dharma, righteousness in all its aspects. We must remain free from the lust for power. This is a great lesson our Savior Guru Gobind Singh taught us. Even if we have our own rule, we are never going to submit to the rule based on injustice and discrimination. The government, native or foreign, which tries to suppress our legitimate demands and perpetuates tyranny and oppression and causes injury to our religious sentiments, will have to face our opposition, and by the help of God we will uproot it. On seeing humanity living in peace and happiness, the Sikh should feel happy. On seeing humanity in sorrow and suffering, the Sikh should be grieved. But whatever service we do to humanity or our country, it should be done under sublime inspiration and noble principles of Gurmat, the Sikh philosophy. The light we received from our true devotion to God and the Guru should be the guiding principle of our fight for righteousness. A service of humanity done under this sublime inspiration of the Guru would be true service of humanity. The love for God can thereby be the sole guiding motive for service and love of humanity. Remember the great ideal of the Guru. I seek not kingdom, I seek not salvation, I seek the love of his lotus feet. Raj na chahun, mukt na chahun, man preet charan kumlare. Letter number 6. Physically, I am better than before. At times, I suffer from piles, but it is automatically cured. Therefore, it is nothing much to worry about. You have been kind enough to perform a kantpat for me. This has given me great spiritual delight. The motive with which it is being performed is bound to bear fruit. You have informed me that all my land has been confiscated by the British government. It is no new news to me. For me, it has been confiscated since a long time. What do I care for such confiscation of land? When these false rulers carry out threats and take pride in false confiscation of my land, I care not a fig about it. It has not worried me in the least, but on the other hand, I feel exalted spiritually, for gladly sacrificing all for the sake of freedom and my country. Letter number 7. All three of us staying at the same barrack. According to the will of God, our days are passing well. Strange are the ways of God. Every day we hear some strange news of the ordeals of the Sikh Panth is facing. The days of separation from the Sangat are also getting prolonged. I have been deprived of the great opportunity to do Kar Seva, divine service of the holy pond of the Golden Temple. Now there is no spiritual anxiety. If I now meet you all once for a while, then the one longing, the trouble, that troubles me may be realized.